Okay, it's not. You're right. You just pressed record.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm scared.
All right, calling this meeting to order at 10 after 6. I'm going to start off with speaker's business because I'm actually supposed to be doing that before attendance according to our standing orders. So first of all, please see two resignations, Councillor Bellinger and Councillor Ruth in the late editions. If you are planning to resign from council and you don't do it before the 15th, that means that your spot will be empty for the rest of the year. So please decide before then. And if you do decide before the 15th, send me your resignation. All you have to say is I resign from Students' Council, and when the date it's effective immediately would be fine. Please make that decision. Last year we ended up with a couple spots because of that. So I appreciate that. The second thing is, starting in September, we will be moving these meetings to Edmonton Clinic Health Academy. I cannot remember the classroom number, so I'll send it out to you. That's not for a month, so I'll send it out to you before then. And your parking passes will be valid in the Education Park parking lot for those meetings instead of the stadium car park, so that will work out. And again, next meeting will be here, but the following meeting in September will be in ECHA. Also, I emailed you guys a couple times about these counselor scholarships. Their nomination forms on that table, they're due at the end of the meeting today. I already have some, so I'm not going to be extending it. So if I don't get your nomination by the end of the meeting today, your name will not be eligible, or whoever you're nominating will not be eligible. I am going to be conducting, for our first meeting in September, it's generally the first one where almost, if not every counselor is there. And so what I think I'm going to do is use the first hour of that meeting. I'll reschedule council to be at 7 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock, and I'm going to use that first hour as a brief update on Robert's rules and some of the governance procedure and a timeline for the year. And also we'll have a quick mock council session. So I think everybody could benefit from that. Even if you are a very experienced counselor or member of council, it probably would still be beneficial for you. And the reason that I'm wanting to delay council by an hour is because I think it is so beneficial that it would be really helpful for everybody to be there. So just be aware of that. And the last thing is I would like to remind you all of the oath that you have taken. And with that, we'll move into attendance. President Yamagishi.
Present.
Vice President Chellen.
Present.
Vice President Kuzmu.
Present.
Vice President Chima.
Present.
Vice President Sumar.
Yes.
Governor Kelly.
Present.
Councillor Milner.
Present.
Councillor Kim.
Present.
Councillor McGinn.
Present.
Councillor Kinda.
Present.
Councillor Mills. She's here. Councillor Ruth. Councillor Borden.
Present.
Councillor Lay.
Present.
Councillor Holt.
Present.
Councillor Smith?
Present.
Councillor Curlew? Councillor Lang?
Here.
Councillor Crone? Councillor Babick?
Present.
Councillor Reitz?
Present.
Councillor Carson?
Present.
Councillor Bellinger? No. Councillor Chaudhry?
Present.
Councillor Champagne? Councillor Truong? Councillor Cucci-Gazil?
Present.
Councillor Nguyen?
Present.
Councillor Pham? Councillor Bowie? Councillor Mumfries, Councillor Hodgson, I am here, and the general manager is as well. Okay, so then we are going to move immediately into presentations, which is the listener situation update presented by Colton Yamagishi and Ichima Sadiq Sumar, sponsored by President Yamagishi. Is there a seconder to this motion? Is there any opposition to seeing this motion, seeing the presentation? No? Okay, you have 30 minutes. Thank you.
We decided to provide you with this presentation today to give you an update on all the things that have been happening with Blissery in the past 3 weeks. It's been quite the eventful haul of interesting material and events, so it's been pretty hard, I would say, on the SU executive. We've been working really hard, and our team has been trying as best as possible to move forward on this and make some positive progress for students. So with that said, the outline presentation will go into a problem outline. Sadiq will explain the changes that have been made and our response to the changes. Andy will explain the breaches in procedure that have been made by the university administration. Andy will also explain the administration's response to our claims. And then I'll go into a timeline of events and explain the bigger picture of what this means for the student team. So the problem outlined, three big problems for us. There has been a complete lack of consultation, a breach of procedure, and poorly researched changes. Now, what this is all to describe is the university has implemented three major changes to the Lister Hall residence without any student consultation. And Steve will tell you all about what those changes are.
Sure. So before I discuss each change individually, just so that there is no miscommunication, there are five major areas of change that were proposed with eight individual changes. We see these as the three major changes coming out of that proposal. So the first one is the change to the staffing structure. Prior to July 23rd, student staff were duly employed by both the LHSA and the University of Alberta. This is no longer the case. Resident Services has chosen to employ their staff with a single reporting line. So that is the first major change. The second change is to change Lister to a first-year residence. Basically, when this change was initially announced, this change is for September 2013. When this change was initially announced, there were only to be the two returning students who would be student staff members. Following a meeting on the 24th, the university was talking about increasing that number to six potentially, and that is one benefit of what could have been consultation, but I think Colton or Andy will discuss that further. So the number six has been increased from their initial proposal of just two returning staff members. Finally, the change to restrict alcohol to just private bedrooms and not to permit alcohol in common areas. In a meeting earlier this morning, Vice President Chima, as well as the LHSA President Eric Martin, heard from some residents, life staff members, that if they don't have enough staff as of this Friday, Lister could be a dry residence completely. So, basically, to elaborate a little bit more on each of the changes, as of August 2nd, there were 40 vacancies in university staff positions. 38 of those students decided to be employees of the LHSA, with two students not returning to either the LHSA or resident services. So basically, 40 staff, according to the letter they were sent, have been terminated from their original employee. Second, with the first-year model, there are so many things that are lost with the lack of returning students, especially for the three executives up here. We've seen the number of returners being reduced on a year-to-year basis. I think in 2008-2009, there were a minimum of 9 returners with a maximum of 15 per floor, and that number has been reduced every single year. So, yeah, sure, go ahead.
When you say 2, and you say it's been increased to 6, is that a total number? Is that per floor, per building? What are we?
It's per floor. So it was 9, let's say, so in 2008-2009, there were 9 to 15 returning students per floor. That number, according to the original proposal for September 2013, would be 2 students per floor, no more.
And just in terms of time, there's quite a bit of information, so we'll try and take questions at the end.
So yeah, you lose the mentorship piece, you lose the tradition piece. There's not really much more to say. In terms of the alcohol change, we see the proposed changes being something that is quite dangerous to students, and something that Vice President Shima very astutely pointed out was the fact that if the residence does become dry and students do decide to drink, they will be forced to drink behind a locked door, which is very concerning to us as executives.
And just for that last point, so basically what they went from was the initial proposal said you had to drink in your room and you couldn't drink in the public spaces. The new proposal, if they don't get the 30 staff by Friday, will be that you aren't allowed to drink at all in residence. So we're assuming that some students still will drink in residence, but they will do so behind a closed door because they don't want to get in trouble. Or they'll go off campus, which could be dangerous because we would rather them be drinking in a university environment where we can, you know, watch over them and make sure they're safe. But Andy will talk about the procedure that's been broken by
you. Thank you, Colton. So just to summarize a bit of what Mr. Sumar has been explaining, we have a number of concerns with the specifics of the changes. Some of them we believe, some of them have some positive elements, some of them will have some unclear impacts, and some of them we think will have some serious health and safety risks that will affect them. However, to be clear, our fundamental issue with this whole situation is the process by which the students get through, or perhaps the lack thereof. So a number of points that I want to touch on. Consultations have been brought up a few times. One place for consultation is specifically enshrined, and where it's specifically listed as an obligation to the university, is in a memorandum of agreement. This was signed in 2008 between Worcester Hall Students Association and the university. To provide a bit of history, earlier in 2008, the university attempted to impose a number of changes, some of which were very similar to changes being imposed now, again without consultation, again without forewarning. And there were protests, there was involvement from the Students Union, from the Student Association, and those changes were retracted, and a memorandum of understanding, so an agreement was signed between the two parties, in order to ensure that that type of situation wouldn't recur. It has recurred, and we believe that the actions of the university don't represent the commitments that they made in their 2008 agreement. The next point I want to bring up is that the Board of Governors in 2011 ruled on who has the authority to create rules for students living in residence. This motion delegated this authority jointly to the Residents Association, so in this case the Worcester Hall Students Association, and to Resident Services. The changes to liquor policies and discipline decisions in the residents would fall under that delegated authority decided by the board, and that isn't something that has been represented either in the university's actions in the last few. The General Faculty's Council Campus Law Review Committee has authority to approve the house rules for residences. In fact, any residence codes must go to CLRC for approval, and depending on the scale of the changes, the GFC Executive Committee for approval. there has been no evidence that these changes have been brought to the appropriate governance bodies of the university for approval. And one final point is that the General Faculties Council has a policy on housing at the UVA, and we believe that a number of principles within that policy have been strayed from. In particular, there's one policy that talks about including students and residents' associations in decision-making affecting residents, and that principle certainly has not factored heavily into the university's actions recently. So in addition to the general good governance principle of actually talking to people who are affected by your decisions and who have knowledge of the decisions you're making, variables that could change what you decide to do, there are a number of procedural and legal rights to consultation as well, which I don't believe have been recognized in this process.
And one of the big things that we're very concerned about is the procedure kind of overstepping the changes themselves. So even if all of the changes were great things that we agreed on, we would still be upset that the procedure wasn't followed. So for example, there were a few changes that we do agree with. They want to have a UAPS officer in Lister, and they want to have a counselor in Lister as well. So we think that these are great things. However, they should have talked to us before they put it in, following these processes, procedures, and bylaws that were set by themselves.
Just one more point so that it can diffuse any confusion relating to meetings that happened earlier this year in January and February. Basically, a proposal was put forward to, it was a sort of a dual change. It was a change to the student staff structure as well as move towards the first year residents. After numerous meetings, the talks stalled, and basically in an email exchange, a university administrator assured the LHSA president at the time, Michael McPhillips, that consultation would start anew in fall. I thought this was a pertinent point to add.
And Andy will also tell you about the administration's response.
Okay, so the administration, the university has made many statements in the last 3 weeks about these issues. Some of them have been to the LHSA, some of them have been to the Students' Union, some written, some verbal, some to the media. There have been a number of discrepancies and I dare say contradictions in these statements, so it's not easy to reiterate the university's precise position. But one recurring theme is that student and staff health and safety concerns and indeed a emergency of student and staff health and safety has precipitated these changes and has justified the apparent breaches of the process. Nevertheless, there has not been any specific evidence given to back up these concerns, and to date I personally remain confused as to what the health and safety emergency is. One interesting point to note is that there are only 3 floors occupied by residents in Lister over the summer, so I'm at a loss as to what the emergency has been. As far as evidence goes, the Students Union has asked for evidence of this emergency and of how the changes that have been proposed would resolve such an emergency. We've been buried with a number of documents, but we don't believe that anything in these documents justifies or substantiates that position. And we have also outlined our specific procedural concerns to the university, and we've been given a blanket statement stating that the university believes it has not done anything wrong, but they haven't addressed our specific concerns. So again, it's
confusing. Okay, so here I'm going to give you a rapid-fire timeline of events so that you guys know the full picture of what's been happening. I'm sure most people have only seen what happens in the press releases and to the media, which isn't quite the full story. So July 23rd, this is the first day we find out about it. A letter of termination is sent to the floor coordinators between 10 and 11 a.m. that morning. The admin meet with the LHSA at 10:30 that morning and meet with the Students' Union executive in full at 11:30. In our meeting with the university, we described to them that we thought this was quite a problem, and they mentioned to us it was going to go to the media by 2 p.m. that day. We managed to negotiate that it wouldn't go out at 2 p.m., because we thought that this would stir a big controversy, which it has. After the meeting, I got an email saying that the release had gone out at 12:08 p.m. and that they apologized for sending it out early. This was an Express News article that was on the U of A website that received a number of hits and comments. In the afternoon, we had another meeting with the administration to basically flesh out exactly what happened and why all this was coming so quickly. This is where the evidence argument came to us, that there's a health and safety concern, but that they didn't have material ready at that time to show us. They did show us a document that really didn't describe much. It talked about some YouTube videos about things that happened in Worcester, but that's about it. SU sent out a press release that night. We sent an email to the board chair with our concern about the board motion that was broken, and we put our form letter online. So this was a letter that students could put their name on and send to a number of senior university administrators. I think about 350 of those have been sent in probably the first 2 days. July 24th, email to Indira. She was on holidays, so I had a bit of an email correspondence with her. We started email interviews, and VP External and I happened to be at a pancake breakfast for the government, and we talked to the Minister of Enterprise and Advanced Education. July 25th, we had a government orientation session in which the minister approached us and said, what's going on? So we told him what we knew about phone. July 26th, postcards for Lister. It's a website that has a number of postcards detailing students' experiences in Lister and why these changes will negatively affect that great opportunity they've had. And a request for a meeting with Indira is sent out. July 27th, we meet with the administrators again. We have a number of concerns, and we provide them a consultation framework for how we can resolve this issue together. They say they need to take a look at this and respond to it, so we give them some time, and the response in the afternoon basically turned into just a discussion about the value of the changes. We keep sending the message that they will not be willing to talk about changes and consultation, basically, until they fix the procedure. So they schedule a follow-up with us on the Monday, in which case I asked for them at that meeting to give us the evidence on why this is an emergency by 5 p.m. They said we can't do it, so we'll have it for you Monday morning. We emailed the minister and the MLA for Edmonton Riverview, where the Worcester resident resides. This is July 30th, so the Monday. So instead of sending us the evidence, they send us a letter of commitment detailing basically the same proposal they sent to us on the 23rd. We reject this, saying that it doesn't address any of our concerns, and no evidence is provided. We publish the consultation documents that we've put forward to them and respond to their Mythbusters thing they put online. Also, Michael McPhillips, the Lister Hall president, last year sent us an email from the university administrator detailing that he will renew discussions in the fall on this. We emailed the Board of Governors members, in which we received a mixed review. There was support from the two student reps, no comment from any other board members because the board chair basically told them to be quiet. July 31st, a response to the evidence and the letter of commitment are sent to the admin from the SU. We emailed the MLA again. August 1st, we hold a press conference about the Lister changes. A number of supporters from the student body come out, and I have a one-on-one meeting with the acting provost. By this point, the administration meetings have kind of devolved into not the healthiest environment, so I decided that it's the best for me to have one-on-one meetings with the acting provost at a very senior level and having current discussions. We requested a meeting with the director of Residence Life, who is also on vacation, but is now back. August 2nd, the FCs are terminated on this date, where in which case 40 out of the 46 did not take the offer. The admin sent emails to the Senate, the Board of Governors, and the Alumni Council with their press release, the one about the peeing habitually on walls, the waking up in your own vomit, and having a weekly glass shower going out of windows. I ask if I can send a response to these three parties and have yet to receive a strong reply from any party except the Alumni Council. I didn't talk to the Senate, sorry. But, yeah, so we send a letter, or we...
We get a letter.
Oh, okay. So the floor coordinators who didn't sign on to res services, they start getting a barrage, is that a word, of emails from resident services telling them that they're such great employees, you're the best for the job, we want you to come back as res services employees. They offer them the fact they don't need to take the mandatory meal plan, plus that they can be elected officials of the Lister Hall Student Association, which still doesn't satisfy our will that we want the RAs to be elected. A meeting with the board chair is scheduled, I think, August 2nd, I had a meeting with the board chair, which went really well. We drafted out some principles of agreement. I had a phone call with the acting provost from the university to say, this is what we think will work. He says, okay, I'll check with my team. August 3rd, which is the Friday, we draft these points into a letter of commitment, which we send out to the admin, and they say, okay, we need to some time to look at it. We'll meet with you on Tuesdays, because it was the long weekend. We took down some of our press releases as an act of good faith, because we thought things were moving really well at this point. The Tuesday, about half an hour before the meeting starts, we receive a letter of commitment from the university as a response to ours, which basically says, we don't agree with any of this. We're wiping it off the table. We're frustrated because this has nothing to do with what we thought was an agreement from the meeting with the board and the discussion with the acting provost. And this meeting's bad, really bad. I request a special meeting with the Board of Governors chair, or with the Board of Governors committee. But I don't think we're going to have that because the board chair doesn't want to. August 8th, the LHSA asks for training. So this is because they think that they're not going to have enough staff in September from the resident services side to basically help facilitate what happened on the course. So the LHSA says, we want to help out. Can we have the training that we were expecting in our previous jobs as a team? They say, okay, like, looks okay, but there might be some concerns. They meet with them over the week. August 10th, I sent out a tweet that the Dean of Students was pretty upset about. It was just basically detailing what's happening in the situation. So I had a conversation with him over the weekend, which I think we came to terms on the fact that my tweet was not malicious at all. But it was an interesting conversation. I think we brought to light a lot of the points that they might have not understood, because a lot of the people making these decisions do not have a strong background in residence life or residence at all, whereas the three of us have been floor coordinators and have lived in Mr. for like 5 years, 3 years, 4 years. So it was an interesting and very humbling phone call. August 14th, which is today, the LHSA is informed that training will not be offered to the Lister Hall Student Association staff unless they can get Res Services 30 RAs by Friday. At this point, we believe they have 16, I think, 15, six of which were the ones who were in that 46. So basically, they've also told them that if they don't have 30 RAs by Friday, Lister will be fully dry, no alcohol whatsoever, which we think is a major, major concern. And that Res Fest, which is a big concert they hold, cannot have alcohol unless they have this by Friday. So a lot of student health and safety concerns. The primary ones are, number one, first-year students will be moving into Lister without trained RAs or floor coordinators on their floor. And the alcohol problem will be forcing students to be drinking either behind closed doors, trying not to get caught, or off campus, where we have no control. So the bigger picture, this whole event has a huge impact on the students' relationship with the administration and that relationship of trust that we previously had. We have not many means to not think that they're acting in bad faith on a number of these principles. We think there's a lot of underlying reasons why these changes are being brought forward, and all of that's kind of like a guess or an assumption, but it's quite clear to us that a number of the things being said to us are contradictory points to what the evidence is showing. This can have an impact on other projects we work on with the university, and basically it's very important for us to stand our ground on this position, because the university has broken procedure that is has a huge impact on students that we represent, and we can't really let them roll this over on this. So that's all we've got. If we have any questions, we'd like to move in camera first. So.
Do you want to do any questions?
If we do, we'll go in camera.
Okay, well, your presentation, even if you go in camera, your presentation is going to end in like 6 minutes.
We can extend it too.
Yeah, you can.
Do you guys have any questions? Yeah. Okay, so someone want to make a motion?
Yeah. Why do you want to move the camera?
A lot of the details that we want to tell you guys are either somewhat confidential, or we would want to give you in a very frank manner so that you can understand the full perspective of the students you can. Dustin.
Which one? motion to move in camera.
Okay. Okay, so a motion to move in camera is a question of privilege, which means it requires a simple majority vote and is not debatable. It's not clear. I have conflicting messages about requiring a seconder, but I'm going to say it probably does require a seconder because it's requiring a vote. So is there a seconder? Councillor Carson, all those in favor? All those opposed? Any abstentions? One. Okay, so we'll move into executive session or in camera. So I'd ask guests to please leave.
Sorry,
camera, and you can open the door. Thank you very much. Okay, so we are now going to move on. To executive committee reports. So are there any members of the executive who would like to make reports? Vice President Challen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Just a quick update to my written submission. Note that Kristen Pla has finished her term as interim student affairs officer, and she has been replaced by Norma Rodenberg, returning to her position on the association task force.
Vice President Chima.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to make a small correction to my report. I indicated that the July 23rd meeting of the FC was canceled, but it was in fact the July 31st meeting. There was no meeting scheduled for July 23rd.
Vice President Suar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few updates on what I've been doing. So this past Saturday, I went to a staff training lunch with the President and the Vice President Operations and Finance. I was training for Info Link and SFAIG staff. We had a chance to meet all the individual staff. It was awesome. I had lots of fun. As well as yesterday, a few members of the evaluation committee for the East Campus Village Housing Project met to determine which proponent would be selected or recommended, I guess, to supply management services. We did select a proponent at this point. At this point in time, I don't know if that information is public, so we have recommended someone. I can tell you by this Thursday, they will be announced. Also, I've been doing a number of meetings with services to go over some goals that I would like to set with them. So I'm working with the services to set some goals. I met with InfoLink earlier today to talk about a few things. Finally, I had a meeting of the Alcohol Policy Review Committee earlier today, which was my first APRC meeting, so it was interesting. It was a good meeting. If you guys have any questions, let me know. Any questions here?
President Yamaguchi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a pretty short report here. Most of my time has been spent with the blister changes. Government orientation moved to the DPX on the street. Got to meet a lot of student leaders from South Alberta. CAUSE is doing very well. Lots of documents coming up, so if you guys are ever interested, I'm sure he'd love to throw them all at you. We talked about a residence budget advisory committee issue with a new residence contract stating that students who move out of residence early will have to pay their full contract fee for the whole year. So we're pretty concerned about that. Fall reading week is somewhat falling behind, but I'll be able to pick up the pace in the next few weeks. I went on an Edmonton Waste Management tour. It was really cool. It was like seeing garbage get pushed around and stuff. The Office of Sustainability. I met with the BSA and there's an article on the Monitor about it, so I don't know why, but it's cool. Relationship building is a lot of fun. And I apologize, my goals are not completely late. I gave you guys a pretty very long one, just since that's great. But I'm extremely busy. And the last part of my report is the Feel Bad for Colton section. So if you see me gripping my shoulders because I was in a soccer accident yesterday, so I guess it's a bad karma for me attacking Councillor Gordon in a previous soccer game. And I told you guys earlier I would be going on a vacation at the end of the week to like New York, Boston, Philadelphia, but I'm not going because I've got work to do. So.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to board and committee reports. Are there any committee chairs or board members that wish to make reports? Vice President Sumar.
Thank you. So, unfortunately, I had to cancel today's ERC meeting. I apologize to all members of ERC. I would like to say that I think the joint bylaw and election review committee meeting we had last week, we had some really good points come out of there. We had some good feedback from councillors and some good points, like I said, that were brought up. I was, not to say that I was impressed, but I was definitely interested in a lot of ideas that the other councillors had about voting. Hopefully ERC can do some work on that stuff. Yeah.
Councillor Borden?
So we talked about VPF and McDuffie's student representative social event, and we're going to support it. And if any counselors would like to use their individual funds to support as well, you can email CAC. And there's $192 divided by the number of current counselors, and it's only for this semester. So there will still be funds available to counselors for next semester.
Any information?
Yeah.
What is that event?
I don't know if I'm supposed to. Can I see the dates? Okay, so we recommended September 12th, and it's a collection of
student
governance from faculty bodies, GFC, and student council to get together and to encourage people to run for the by-election, which is why we're doing it before the by-election. It's meet the counselor night. Every letter people get there.
Just keep going with the rest of your CAC report.
Okay, then we'll move right into question period, beginning with our first 15 minutes with Vice President Sumar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Vice President Academic. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on this mixer.
Thank you to the Vice President Student Life for this question. Note that this mixer / meet the council night / everything else that it's been called has been in attempting to call it a student representative open house. It's based off of the recommendations of the Discovering Students in Governance 2011-2012 report. Recommendations 1, 4, and 5 recommend essentially that it's important to build communities of practice among students who are serving in similar representative roles on campus. That report was the same one that produced the results that there are about 400 positions where students are involved in university governance. The objective here is to get together all types of different student representatives, allow them to share their experiences, and build a community of practice where they are able to share their experiences, and as well as encourage each other to participate in different representative opportunities, in particular running for GFC Students Council, as well as our Students Council. There's been a need identified by both Discover Governance as well as the CRO, and one of the worthwhile in coordinates for this project with CAC as well. So more information will be upcoming in 2 weeks. Thanks for your question.
Any further questions? Councilor Carson?
I'm just wondering who I can talk to about how we plan what cookies we have, because I just ate a peanut one, and that's potentially life-threatening. Yeah. So, just want to double-check, can't kiss my boyfriend now. So I'm wondering, yes, general manager.
As someone who shares a nut allergy, I was like, damn it, I don't know what cookies to eat. So I will certainly raise it to make sure that they are labeled properly next time. $49? Damn.
Councilor Kinda.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for Vice President Estrella. In your report, you talked about how there's a report published regarding import regulations. They said that the regulation had no inflationary effect on textbooks, meaning you have to find another reason. But wasn't that the primary reason in the first place? So why would you have to look for another reason to correct this? And what would it
thanks for the question, Mr. Speaker. And that excellent question, actually, that was kind of one of the things that I hope to talk about today, about the Heritage Canada report. So Heritage Canada, an arm of the federal government, recently published a 100-plus page report on book importation regulations. And are we happy with what the report said? Not necessarily, because it's essentially said that the bulk importation regulations aren't essentially responsible for, let's say, inflationary costs of the textbook prices, so which makes our case harder when we're lobbying to the federal governments. What I was trying to say in my report was that it was indicated to us at the CASA Policy Strategy Conference that as a result of this report's findings, the way that we'll have to find a different avenue of how we argue for the elimination of book importation regulations. Currently, the way we make our case is that book importation regulations currently inflates the prices of textbooks more than it normally should be. And that is the case with the 10 to 15% addition onto the actual sticker price. But beyond that, Heritage Canada essentially said that that's not the case. Is that still kind of? Okay. Well, sorry for being long on that. Essentially, I'll be sure to talk more about it in my next report. I haven't had a chance to actually read it over. Thanks for reading my report. Which is your gold star?
Governor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question is for the President or whichever executive is best qualified at answering this particular question. About a day ago, we got a question, or sorry, an email from an individual named Char, if you remember that. And she was an open study student who was concerned about the fees she was paying as a student, like student fees, because she was only taking one course, and so she was concerned that why should I have to be paying for all these student fees associated with when I'm just taking one course. And so I guess I'm just wondering what response are we formulating, because it was sent to my account as well. So what response are we formulating, and how are we addressing the concerns of that individual? Because I feel it's definitely a legitimate concern. And something I hadn't thought about is why do open study students? I realize part-time students have to pay less DFUs and things like that, but what about open study students? And I, being an open study student myself a long time ago, I hadn't actually thought of that. But anyways, so just whichever one of you is best able to respond, thanks.
Sure, thanks for the question. I think that in Char's letter, she had a lot of good points and a few that needed a bit more information. As all the executive plays for one class per year, we're in the same situation where we pay about $600 for a class, a little bit for our textbook, and then like $600 in mandatory non-instructional fees. So a large piece of that $645 she's talking about is the cost fee. You get a reduced cost fee if you're a part-time student, but you still have to pay quite a bit towards it. With that, there's also the health and dental plan, which you can also out of. So that's how much is it for you?
$190.
Okay, so a lot of that. Thank you. And then UPass too. So the UPass is the one that you can't opt out of unless you meet the specific criteria. You're getting a significant service for that. So I think that we definitely share the concern that the NFs are a large cost, whether you're a part-time student taking one class or a full-time student taking one class. So Roe is advocating for the solution to that problem. However, a lot of that $645 she talks about, she can either opt out of or get great service for. Does anyone want to add to that? Chima?
I'll just add that the SU fees as well as the SU membership fees as well as some DFUs are prorated for part-time students. I don't want to comment on the particular fees that a given student is paying in a public setting, but I am preparing a factual response to that email. That's all I have to add.
Could you say that to me just so I can see it?
Okay, Councillor Milner.
Oh, yeah. So,
just to that general manager here. Just in general in relation to that, if you're looking at the turkeys there, we've been talking about the water bottles and stuff as well. Like, we have cops there. I just wonder if we can get like a water cooler or something, so we're not wasting like 40 water bottles.
I will investigate, no promise.
And actually, there's...
Sorry, one question at a time.
Oh.
Councilor Holt?
Okay. So this is for President Yamagishi. I was going over your goals document, and I came across something that I think has caused a lot of, like, this sort of thing that I saw in there is what's kind of the root of a lot of our problems. You said in so many words under your U of A Pride section that we are going to do whatever we can to support the success of grassroots movements such as social justice. Considering how the university is, by this Lister Hall issue, seeing us as, you know, children and a predictable, like, you know, they know what we're going to say before we say it, do you really think it's wise to associate ourselves with radical left-wing movements?
So I'll take this one that looks like a lot of people I think my answer is pretty simple. When I speak about grassroots or social justice, that doesn't mean radical left wing. When I talk about social justice, I'm talking about social justice as it is. So you can have a very, very conservative social justice movement. I don't know if I understand completely what you're asking, but what I was trying to say in that is that I want to empower underrepresented groups. I want to empower people who are looking for levels of social change that might not be widely accepted. Not saying I'm going to accept it with open arms, but I'll at least be open to balancing the opportunities to see if it's good for our students or bad for our students. When we look at social justice, though, I think that's like a big debate that always comes to the SU. But I know certain counselors are looking at making a sustainability committee to look at different aspects of the three pillars of sustainability and how they relate to the Students' Union. And I think we're meeting tomorrow morning. But I'll defer to whoever. Vice President Kuzma?
Thanks. Thanks for the question, and it's really interesting one, Councillor. It should also be noted that it's one can interpret the political policies of the Students' Union as very social justice in a sense as well, in terms of what we currently advocate for to the federal government or provincial government, that any student who has the marks and has the will to go and get a pursuing education, but doesn't have finances, should be able to get a university degree, whatever it is. So I mean, like, you could really interpret it a whole bunch of different ways. I see it as very social justice, what we advocate for, in my opinion, at least. But yeah, I think you want to be careful in extrapolating that as being, you know, associated with radical groups, et cetera. But it's an interesting question to raise, so thanks for bringing it up.
Counsel McGinn.
So, coming from a democratically elected radical, I would just like to throw out a question, I guess, to a yourself, even. Can I ask questions to counselors?
Yeah, just address them by their title.
Counselor Holt. Sorry. In the last 3 months, I've been working with said radical organizations and putting together a committee to work with the Students' Union on the committee that Colton just mentioned, to work with the Students' Union to increase its social as well as environmental sustainability and justice efforts. And I was just wondering if there was any major objections that you might have to the idea of said committee, so that I can prepare for them in the next council meeting. Thank you.
I think we're having an issue with the connotations and definitions of social justice. If I had a better explanation of what these words meant, because to me, you know, it very clearly signifies a radical left-wing movement. If that's not what it means to you, please enlighten me on what it means to you.
Councilor Milner. Councilor Carson.
I can't.
I want to answer questions.
Nope, sorry.
No, I can't.
Are there any further questions?
Personal privilege?
Sure.
Is this inappropriate?
There, a member can ask any member of council another question. It would be up to council to decide whether the discussion is relevant. It's not something that I necessarily can determine. But I would ask councillors maybe not to start their questions with as long as a preamble, and also to make sure you're observing formality by addressing each individual member of council by their title, and also just being careful in terms of the tone that you take in referring to questions and answers. Vice President Sumar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess in light of the recent questions, I'll ask Councillor Carson, and feel free to defer to you, anybody else. How do you define social justice?
Can I get hands up on who would like to be deferred to next?
Okay. That isn't necessarily a good way to do that.
Okay. I apologize.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Personally, I just feel that social justice is something that is about human rights and allowing equal chance to all humans to have the same things. As far as the university stance goes, I believe that that means allowing every student to have the equal chance to live in an appropriate housing, allowing every student to have equal chance to pay their education on time, or equal chance to the scholarship they need to be able to pay their education. I understand where your point is coming from, and I hope that we can talk about it personally afterwards, Dr. Holt. But social justice can be as much as me giving you a dollar if you're short under lunch, kind of, and just paying back whatever you want. But that being said, I don't know if this really is an appropriate conversation to be having in council. I think that this is maybe something that should be brought up to maybe even CAC, or to the councilor in general, or the executive member privately. But I will defer to Councilor McGinn.
I apologize if my tone was not appreciated. However, I just come from a group of students who, including the Student Umbrella for Social Justice, we don't necessarily consider ourselves a radical left-wing group. In fact, we are nonpartisan. I was just a little bit taken back by the comments. Perhaps we can get into the definition of social justice in a more appropriate time period. However, I felt the context of the question was negative, inappropriate, and needed to be addressed, and that is why I acted perhaps a little bit more quickly and harshly than what I normally would. That is all.
Our first 15 minutes has passed. I have one name on my speaker's list. We'll move on unless I see five placards. Very well. Councillor Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for BP External: what's progress like with property taxes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks for that for that excellent question, Councillor. So today, perfect time that you asked the question. I had an excellent meeting with Don Hickey and Doug Dawson, Vice President of Facilities and Operations, and his right-hand man, essentially, in regards to the Students' Union and the University working in tandem towards the elimination of property taxes on residences. And this has been a question that Councillor Holt, I believe, brought up in the past, and lots of interesting debates and questions that have been raised. Nevertheless, we had this meeting with the university, expressing that, hey, we're on the same side of this issue. We'd like to advocate and work towards this. However, we want an agreement to be established saying that whatever state revenue you'd have from foregoing these taxes and doing, let's say, eliminated or phased out, would go into deferred maintenance for these residences, which is extremely important. And they seem to agree with this, and very understanding, and one team signed up with a memorandum of understanding or agreement. So there's a couple things, some takeaways. First is that progress is good for this goal. Our partners, our partner organizations at UCU Bell are also working towards this, and things are looking good. And the second thing is that, you know, despite all the solicitor stuff happening and everyone being worried about us burning our bridges with the university demand, this shows quite the opposite, that they're more than willing to work with us on this issue. They're more than willing to work with them. We can get on the same page. So I think it's a good message to show that it's not the end of the world with this story. You're not completely burning their bridges, so don't take it out yet. But yeah, that's really it. Thanks for the question.
Councilor Kinda.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is also for Vice President Kuzmi. Just real quick, for the Council of Board of Directors, you said that you're now a director at large.
Yeah.
What exactly would that entail?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for asking the question, Councilor. Director at large, yeah, this is essentially being like one of the Board of Governors. You just help run the organization itself with what our business is mainly HR, finances, kind of helping steer the ship of the organization. Just one of the beverages at large. That's my new position with CASA, our federal lobby organization. So there's a secretary, I'm taking the minutes, et cetera. There's a treasurer, that's self-explanatory. There's a chair of the organization that works a lot in tandem with the membership and the national director. The director at large is just being one of the folks that helps out. There's four of us that helps out just running the organization. So that's probably 10. So, yeah. Thanks for the question.
Councilor Babick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for the VP of Cell.
Yep.
Tell me more about UPass related matters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. In terms of the UPass, what we're doing right now, and by we I mean the Nate Student Association, the Student Association at McEwen University, the University of Alberta Students Union and the Graduate Students Association are working together in a proposal for the various transit providers that we will be presenting to them next week, in a week's time, basically tomorrow, at our UPass advisory meeting. This contains a lot of facts from reports and whatnot that relates directly to the price of the UPass for students and a suggestion for how the price should be structured for the next 4 years. To give you a little bit more information, because I'm assuming you're interested in having more details, basically what we have found from the data that has been provided from a survey group is that the number of trips, the number of average trips per student per month is lower than what ETS is suggesting. What ETS is suggesting, this number is used in a formula, is that the average number of trips, one-way trips, is 47 trips per month for an average student. The data we have received is closer to the range of 41 trips. That number, that multiplier is multiplied by a percentage of the UPass fare, which is 30% of fare product, times the sort of single cash fare, which is $3 at this point, times 4 months for the 4 month length of the UPass. Basically at this point, what we are counter proposing is that following this year, that the UPass price be set at $145 for 2 years, then considering an increase of 25 cents in the cash fare, that price go to $155. So the contract would be a four-year contract, with the first 2 years being $145 and the next 2 years being $155. If you have any more questions, feel free to ask some follow-up. I'd be more than happy to give you more details.
With that, it exhausted the speakers list. So, Councilor Milner.
I'm just wondering your question for anyone. Who knows about the position that was created over the summer for this farmers market coordinator? I was wondering what has been going on with that, and who that is, how I could get in touch with them.
Well, I'm happy to announce that there's a lineup selected of farmers market people that will be the same through the year. It's a great lineup. I don't know the exact. I can try to explain it to you. We have hired the coordinator. She's been working out of the same SU. She works until, she's paid until the end of, it's a summer job, so she's paid until the end of the summer. She's working to basically get everything set up so that it's easier to run the farmer's market during the school year. The farmer's market will start on the second week back, and will run approximately every 2 weeks for both terms. It's looking really great, and I'm so happy with how it's going there. They have a tremendous range of vendors coming in, and it's paying for it. To do the farmer's market, we actually forego revenue from our regular bookers, and we're easily making that money back, and some extra to vote towards marketing the program itself. It's looking great. I don't know if that answers your question. If you want to get in touch with them, you just contact SustainSU.
Vice President Kuzma.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question goes to Vice President Student Life. Recently, I've seen a lot of billboards around campus in regards to some kind of open house, the East Campus Village Housing Project open house. I was wondering if you can just talk more about that and tell me what's happening.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the amazing question, which is not planned at all. So I apologize, but I forgot to mention this in my report. For those people who are interested, please pass this along to your constituents. There is an East Campus Village Housing Project meeting in the Rutherford Atrium this Thursday from 5:30 to 8:30. This will basically outline the design we've selected. We'll be able to answer all your questions. This is an open house for students and Garno community members. So everyone and anyone is welcome. Hopefully we'll be able to attend with, I think we have an orientation video shoot sometime that evening. So I'm looking to at least attend part of that. But the design is really interesting, and I think what they're looking for is a little bit of feedback on how to move forward with the design. So really, it's a really exciting project, and I encourage all of you to come out.
That exhausts my speakers list, so I'm going to move on. Okay.